You're listening to Sci-Fi for Chicks on Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
Ever get the feeling that someone looks familiar?
Then suddenly, it hits you.
My name is Beth.
Heather.
Marie.
Alex.
Allison.
Katya.
Kasima.
My name is Sarah.
But who are they?
What's going on?
When did I become us?
Hi, and welcome to Sci-Fi for Chicks. My name is Heather, and I'm joined, as always, by Alex. Hello, Alex.
Hello, everybody.
And we have a returning chick. We haven't talked to her in so long because Alex and I have been selfish and have just kept the podcast, me and her. We have Marie. Hey, Marie.
Hi.
Yay. Marie, last summer, started watching Orphan Black. I don't know if it was just because Alex and I have been podcasting and we're talking about it or other forces. We'll get into that in a second. But she started catching up season one and then season two, and she's been bugging me for a few months now. When are we going to talk Orphan Black? When are we going to talk Orphan Black? So we're going to talk Orphan Black before the season starts again and we start doing our regular, and I'm using air quotes because this is Sci-Fi for Chicks and something always likes to come up. This one we're going to do a look back and play favorites in looking at seasons one and two. So we're going to have some fun getting ready for Orphan Black, which comes back April 18th on BBC America. It is also going to be, I don't know if you guys have heard this, it is going to be a simulcast or the opener at least will run simultaneously on AMC, Sundance TV, IFC, and WeTV, because AMC has kind of bought quite a bit of rights there on BBC America and has seen that Orphan Black is kind of a binge-worthy show.
Hey, if it means more people get into it, I'm all for that. You know, sell the rights, put it on AMC, put it after The Walking Dead.
Well, The Walking Dead might be coming to a close by then. Also, if you have not seen seasons one and season two and somebody doesn't already own them digitally or you don't want to own them digitally, you can go to Amazon because it is part of Amazon Prime, which is exactly why my friend couldn't start binge watching and catch up on this awesome show because she doesn't have Amazon Prime. So if you want to do some catching up and a little binge watching,
that's how there I watched the first season, is I was like, oh, this is on Amazon Prime now? Oh, well, time to get started. Let's go.
It is such a, because it's only, each season's only 10 episodes, so it's actually really easy to get through, and it is addicting. And Digital Trends actually has five shows that are binge-worthy that, you know, you should binge-watch, and three of the shows I kind of maybe have heard of. Ralphie May, Unruly, he's a comedian. Clerks 2 and 1,000 Times Good Night. So I'm kind of like, okay, well, I guess maybe if I have time and can find it, I'll do that. The other two were Orphan Black and House of Cards. And I will say yes, both of those are very binge-worthy. Very binge-worthy. So if you haven't watched season one or two, you still have time. Trust me, I think you could actually, as long as you have a couple days before April 18th, once you watch the first episode, you're hooked. You're going to be
true.
Just watching. Mm. Speaking of, how did you guys get started watching Orphan Black? What was the hook that got you to watch it? Marie, let's work backwards. You're the newest Orphan Black Clone Club member.
I actually watched it when it started. Like, it was like, it like came on after Doctor Who or something. It was this big deal. Oh, this new show, Orphan Black, blah, 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 blah. And I started watching it and I was like, this is pretty cool. And then it got kind of gross because Sarah and Paul were like getting it on. And I was like, maybe I don't want to watch this. Maybe I got kind of uncomfortable. So I was like, you know, I'm good. I had enough British television for tonight. So I just turned it off and I went away and I didn't watch it. And then later, my dad had started watching it and I'm like, oh man. Maybe I need to watch this. If my dad thinks it's good, I probably think it's good. So I go ahead and I'm like, well, it's on Prime now. I'll just watch it. And so I watch it, and then I die. Because I don't have access to season two, and I need to know what is this universe? And then I finally bugged my dad enough to buy it for me on Prime. Season two on Prime, because it wasn't out for free yet. And so I bugged him enough to buy it for me, and I finished watching it, like, just a month or two ago, and was like, ah.
And now you have to wait again.
Yes. Yeah,
that is probably the worst thing about binge-watching something that's not a complete series, is you get so used to watching every episode at your speed, which could, for me, sometimes be completely back-to-back, and then you have to wait 6, 8, 9 months, a year, for it to complete itself, and it's torture. It's torture. Which every time I do, somebody that binge watches and then complains to me, I have to wait a week for the next episode. I'm like, shut up. I had to wait 9 months for Lost. Oh, I did it again, Alex.
Yeah.
My goal is to get Lost in every podcast. Okay, Alex, how did you get into
Orphan Black?
What made you want to watch it?
Actually, when it started on BBC, all my friends were, like, blown away and were telling me, you have to watch Orphan Black. It's awesome. And there's this one actress who plays all the characters. And she's incredible. And you can't even tell. She's playing all those characters. And I was like, yeah, right. Because I'm going to believe you that's possible. Plus clones, hey, whatever. So I didn't actually jump on the bandwagon immediately when the first season premiered. But like with many other things, Tumblr made me do it when I finally saw on my dash a GIF from one of the first episodes of the Clone Club sitting on the couch. It was, I think, the first or second season, second episode, I mean. When Sarah, Allison, and Cosima were sitting on the couch, and I was, okay, three probably sisters are sitting on the couch. Wait a minute. Is this the same person? And I had this revelation. So, and it was right after season one finished, and so I binge-watched the first season. I started on Saturday afternoon. I finished Sunday 4 a.m. after watching all 10 episodes. And then I had to, you know, exist and be coherent and be able to put the sentence together, which was something of a, you know, problem at that point. But I've seen the entire season in less than 2 days. And then I had to wait 7 months. I don't remember how long, but it's been too long. That's for sure. And then we watched season two with Heather together. It was week after week, and I had to wait for so long for the next episode. But yeah, Tumblr made me do it.
It was so hard. I remember that. It was so hard with you because you're like, I just want to wait till the end of the season then watch them all together. But no, Heather, because you want a podcast.
Yeah, and I have to watch this to myself, which in the end ended up being a good thing because I met certain characters sooner rather than later. But, you know.
Hashtag shiny happy place.
Happy place. But yeah, it's been a ride. What about you, Heather?
Well, I actually remember seeing the teaser trailer on BBC America in, I guess it was the fall of 2012. And it was just the one with the, who are all these other girls kind of thing. It's the one that I use in the opening we have for this podcast. And I had no idea what it was, but it looked really intriguing. I remember emailing Doreen, another one of the chicks and one of my best friends, and saying, I don't know what the show is, but we got to watch it. Because this is just crazy. It looks really interesting and intriguing. And when it started, again, I think, Marie, like you said, it was right after Doctor Who. So I was like, okay, you know, I'll watch this. That scene right near the beginning when Sarah's on the train platform and she sees her doppelganger in Beth Childs. And Beth looks so defeated, so worn. I mean, we have this super punk girl in Alice, in Sarah. Oops. I jumped ahead of clone. We have the super punk girl in Sarah, and then she sees this very nicely dressed other woman that just looks so defeated, and she just walks right off the platform into this oncoming train, splattered everywhere. I was totally hooked. It was one of those things. You got me. I'm here for the next 10 episodes. No worries. I want to see this play through. And I was not disappointed, I think, all season long.
Mm.
Was I? No, we weren't podcasting then, so I don't know. Speaking of which, our season 2 of Orphan Black, we did podcast on. So go back to Sci-Fi for Chicks, and you can catch up on the season 2 podcast. The first episode was 4 episodes in 1 because I was out of the country at that time. So we had to record 4 in 1. But we did individual episodes after that. So it's a great way to kind of catch up on that. That was me and Alex. And hopefully this season, Marie will be joining us.
Yay. I'm so excited. Oh my goodness.
So let's, you know, I have to be honest, Alex and I haven't watched Orphan Black since it ended last season. Number one, we're busy. Number two, it's kind of sad to watch it again and know that you don't have new episodes to go into right afterwards. So instead of going piece by piece through seasons 1 and 2, which would bore Alex anyway, she would scowl at me if we were going in order. And we don't do that here on Sci-Fi for Chicks. We decided that since this is a huge cast of characters that are pretty much all in one person.
Yeah, I was about to say, it's fabulous, not a huge cast. It's a lot of characters, but not a lot of cast.
It's a huge cast. Well, you know, watching Tatiana Maslany do this character, I totally believe that she's all these different separate people. I mean, she has different music lists and different dances, and her stand-in actor, Kate Alexander. Sorry, I forgot your name. You're fabulous. She actually acts everything with Tatiana. So, I mean, there's two people acting 10 characters every time that we have clones up there. It's fabulous. And she has been, Tatiana has been snubbed Emmy-wise. I'm very upset with the Emmys and that she's not even getting nominated. She is up tonight. The Canadian Screen Awards are tonight. There's some uproar because some people think that it shouldn't be up for Best Canadian TV Show because it's financed by BBC. But funny, Canada. I've heard things like that before. When it comes to American productions going up to Canada, it
can be, you know, classified as their thing.
As far as, like, what you're saying about, like, her playing on those different characters, it actually, there's a moment where Sarah is, like, there's a bunch of moments where they impersonate each other. One of them, like, the one where Allison is pretending to be Sarah. I remember sitting there and being like, man, that actress is so good at her accent. How does she do her... Oh, yeah. It's because she's the same person. And then again, when Sarah's pretending to be Cosima, I'm like, man, they're just so alike. How does she get it so... Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You're the same person. Well, there was an interesting video that was even talking about that, how the reason that Sarah's British is because it's BBC America. And so BBC was like, make the main character British so that we have that tie. But that they said that that actually really opened it up in that being a way to help differentiate the different characters is they grew up in different places. And so they can have these different accents, even though we only get a taste of the German accent with Katya. But we have Helena's accent, which Alex has talked about several times about how perfect an Eastern European accent this is. It scares me. Yeah, because I think that too. When she's Helena especially, I'm like, this has to be somebody else. It has to be. And I do not understand how she's not getting nominated. I'm not even trying to push for a win, although I think she should win. But how she's not even being nominated for an Emmy with this. And I have to admit, at the Screen Actors Guild Awards, she was nominated for Outstanding Female Actor. She lost to Viola Davis, who's an awesome actress, but I'm like, Viola, you're playing one lawyer. She's playing 10 clones. Shut up. She should have won.
Yeah, you see, I'm hesitant to say this to Viola Davis because she's badass on that show. And I would be afraid of getting, you know, killed if she's anything like Annalise Keating. It's just, let's be careful, or, you know, we will not be here to record season 3.
She is fabulous. I love her. Oscar and everything, I think, it just outright, but Tatiana has been snubbed way too many times, and that was just season 1 of How to Get Away with Murder, so Tatiana's been snubbed for 2 seasons now, Orphan Black. So since we're talking about clones, let's play favorites a little bit, and talk about our favorite clone. Who would like to go first? Or I don't know if we can pick just one, but we're going to talk favorite clones right now.
I can go. I know mine. Okay. I know mine.
Go.
I know my favorite clones. My first favorite clone is Tony, without a doubt. It's just Tony.
Nice one.
He's perfect. He's perfect. He's just so perfect. And I love him, and he needs to be in more episodes. He's so cute. And him and Felix. I'm just gonna fangirl here. Sorry, I'm dying. I can't think about Tony and not just be like, baby. It's like, here's a clone, and you know, you see a clone, and you're like, expecting, oh, here's this girl, but then Tony's like, yeah, no, by the way, I'm a boy. Deal with it. And it's just so perfect, and, aww. And then him and Fee are like the cutest thing in the history of the universe, and I also think it'd be the funniest thing for Tony and Fee to get together. And Sarah just be weirded out, just like, oh, I can't be in the same room as you two.
Yeah, see, I'd be weirded out because that's your brother, Sestra. Fee is, ew. But wait, you're not related, but you are. But ew, it's, yeah, that's definitely crossing new lines there. Yeah, Tony was a big surprise. I remember us podcasting on it, and we were just like, what? Really? They're going there? And not that it was bad, but it was just like, it was unexpected to have this we did not see it coming, this transgender clone. The only problem I think we had really with Tony was, we hoped that they were putting him in that one episode or an episode plus a little bit to set him up for something really good for season 3, because it seemed so quick. He was in and then he was gone. And that was the problem I really had with Tony, was I hope that wasn't a stunt. I hope that was setting up for something really awesome in season 3.
I'll be really, really disappointed if Tony doesn't come back, but I don't know. I just really appreciated, like, how accurately he was portrayed, and I love that, you know, they didn't try and make him look crazy.
Yeah.
But they didn't, like, not, they, you know, they didn't make him not look like the other clones. He still looks like a clone, but he, you know, it looks like, oh yeah, he's been on T, he's done all this stuff, he's transitioning, and he's living his life how he wants to, and I just think that's so cute, and oh, baby.
I thought it was a really great, way to introduce clones, because I think we've seen with the other clones, too, that even though they're all clones, they all have very different aspects to themselves. They're not carbon copies of each other. So to have it where, yes, you can be a clone and yet still have this gender identity issue that you're dealing with and you're resolving by being transgender, I think that was brilliant, because it does show that, you know, even these quote-unquote carbon copies aren't. You know, they're all incredibly individual. I really do hope that with season 3 bringing in the Project Castor, which are the male clones, that's going to create some kind of cool tension between the Lita and the Castor, and then we have Tony, and I really want to see Tony back and have him not be just a shock value.
I think he could be a really kick butt character.
Yeah. I think so too, yeah. I don't want him to fall into shock value.
Yes, I'll be so sad. I will, I'll be lining outside some writer's doors. There will not be. Yeah.
But he has to have a storyline. He can't just be there for the sake of being there. So if I have to choose between him not coming back in season 3 and him coming back just to, you know, be in the room while the girls are doing things and actually, you know, doing things and pushing the storyline forward. I'd rather he not be there so that I can, you know, worship the memory of him instead of being irritated at the potential that's being wasted right in front of my eyes.
I don't know why he wouldn't, like, help the Clone Club, though. Like, I can't see any reason why he would just, like, sit in Felix's house and not help the other clones, like, try and figure out what's going on. Because they've got to all be curious.
What was the reason, again, that he left? That we had to get him out of Dodge? Do you remember?
I don't remember. I just know that, in my experience, the writers of various TV shows, you think it's impossible to waste the potential and not have a storyline for a character? I know it's possible. I've seen it happen. So, I'll be skeptical.
Don't even say it. Don't give them the idea. Just protect him. Protect him at all costs.
We can do that. We can do that. He'll always be a part of our shiny, happy place. So.
Yes.
So, Alex, who would be a favorite clone of yours?
Do not make me choose. It's so difficult.
You don't have, it's not the favorite, a favorite.
It's a favorite. I have a soft spot for Helena. Because she's absolutely bonkers and I love her. I love how different she is and how different she looks at the world. Plus I really appreciate how spot on everything Tatiana does with her is. And I want to see where her story is going. Though I'm pretty sure I've said that in the podcasts, past, how I don't really want her to be the one who gets hurt, gets kicked, gets in trouble all the time. Because after a while, it will stop being so, you know, painful and shocking. Because Helena will be, you know, the one that gets hit and hurt and nothing goes her way ever. So I want her storyline to be something aside from her insanity. Which is why I liked everything that happened to her in season 2, because it was so complex and we got everything. Every emotion, every situation that she was in was something new and exciting. So I want to see more of her. And not, you know, I'm an experiment, watch me being tortured. I'm just saying.
Yeah, it's especially in season 3, you saw a lot of Helena, like, being kind. And, like, her little, like, romance with the trucker guy.
Jesse.
Like, that was so cute. That was so cute. I want to see more of that. And I want to see more of her getting close with the clones. Like, when Cosima hugs her during the dance party, yes. Like, at the beginning of the dance party, I'm like, yes, you all need to be hugging her. She just needs to learn. She doesn't know. Just help her learn.
I like you. You can stay.
It's amazing to me that this character that started out as this murderous assassin that we did not like. I mean, come on. Yeah. Season 1, we were all scared of her. I mean, we liked the fact that this was this great character, this complex character, and such a departure from the other clones. But you weren't necessarily rooting for her because she was trying to hurt all of our other clones and everybody else. That now we've gotten to this point that she is. It's just like you just want to take her and hug her and go, it's going to be okay, Helena. I know there's 3 reasons why Alex likes Helena. We have the Eastern European connection.
Yes.
So you understand her better than I think we do because you understand that. Because Helena's heart was pretty much as black as yours, Alex. Mm. And because of Jesse.
Yes.
Jesse.
My precious little Jesse.
Those moments with Jesse, her boyfriend, were just so sweet, so perfect, so I loved how she brought that out. Yeah. Of where did Tatiana get that? I think, you know, be able to find that kind of sweet, innocent emotion. And then be able to flip it, like, with the whole thing with the Proletheans and, mm-hmm. and, was it Henrik or Herrick or what? I'm crossing into being human there with Herrick, I think. But him wedding her, drugging her, wedding her, you know, taking her babies, my babies.
That whole thing with the Proletheans. I would like sit in my chair while I'm watching it and just squirm, just like, do not do.
I think I was watching, yeah, going, they're not going there, are they? They're not going, not, come on, Helena's had enough. Look at her. I mean, her back looks like Jamie's on Outlander.
Yeah.
She's been through so much torture. She's been through, and I think this is just so fabulous that the show made us go from, this is an assassin, hopefully she dies, to,
let's hug her.
Not Helena. Hug. Let's sing in the car. You know, yes. let's do a dance party.
See, and that's the thing, like, I really liked that moment, too, of her singing, and I liked how she let Gracie and Blawface, I don't know, he looks like a vampire, whatever, Mark, Gracie's boyfriend go.
Mark.
Who cares?
Well, you're going to be getting a lot more of him, you better care, because he's the clone.
That's a good
he's
point.
He's the male clone.
I don't care about the male clones. All I need is... whatever.
Be careful, because by the end of season 3, you will be like, oh, I love male clones. Because the
exactly.
writers do.
Remember how we thought about Helena?
That's probably true.
Well, and he's got a good creepy look to him at that promo that they have, you know. They never have, and they never will. And he just looks down and gets his evil look. I'm like, oh my gosh, you're so creepy. This is going to be awesome.
See, that's my worry. Are all the male clones going to be, like, creepy and scary? Or do we get one that I want to hug? Because I just...
We better.
I think that's him. I think Scarface is what they call him. Kind of like is his nickname, but he's, what is this? Rudy is his actual character name, is the one that's kind of psycho. Then you have the soldier clone, which has a couple different names depending on what he's called or what it says on his uniform. And then you have Mark, who was the one that was with Gracie and was rescuing her. I think you're going to have that. I don't think they're going to do it where all of the male clones are one thing, because that would be really stereotypical.
Come on, we need at least one male clone that's going to be like a gentle florist who, I don't know, is living in Vancouver with his boyfriend. And
I want, like,
something
one that has no idea.
Well, they say in this that the Castor clones, the Project Castor clones, which are all the men, are self-aware that they're clones. So they're kind of more like Rachel. But then again, Sarah had no idea at all. And she wasn't even being monitored. They didn't, as far as we know, they didn't know. So you never know. It there could be a non-self-aware.
There is always hope.
Of the cloneliness. There's always hope. Always hope. Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi.
What about
one of them got, like, hit by a bus as a kid, and then they got amnesia, and then they went through the rest of their life. Oh, why do you mean? I don't know anything about projects. I just like flowers.
Yeah, was this, like, Ferdinand? The Ferdinand clone just wants to sit under the cork tree and smell the flowers? I'm doing so many different references in this one. My favorite clone. I really do have a soft spot for all of them, and I'd say probably number 2 is Cosima, because she is so fabulously awesome in her science-iness and showing that chicks can be these science geniuses. Yeah, they can, but I have to admit, my favorite is Allison. She is just so neurotically perfect. She is so different from the other clones, the way Tatiana portrays her and jumps back and forth. Allison has so many stereotypes that aren't stereotypical. And I love that. When she's torturing Donnie with the glue gun. When
yeah.
when they find, when she sees that Donnie killed Leaky and he's in the trunk. And she's like, well, you didn't wrap the body well.
Do this, right?
Exactly. And then you know, like they bury Leaky and put the cement over him in their garage. And yeah, that's a big like, turn
Donnie
off for
can't
them.
Use the jackhammer. And Allison's just like, just go. I'll take care of it. Oh.
Just hilarious. And she... Watching her try to keep it together when she was in rehab after her Blood Ties the Musical. I mean, come on. This this woman is in a musical called Blood Ties covered
that
in blood.
That musical was just like, oh man.
Just so many different aspects. Her thinking, she's got this paranoid thing with thinking that Donnie's her monitor, then Ainsley's her monitor, then it's back to Donnie and all the... She's even in the preview, the only preview really that I've seen for season 3 is a clone conference call. And while everybody else is worrying about various aspects of everything they're going through, she's at her kid's soccer game and she's doing the whole soccer mom sideline coaching while she's dealing with all this clone stuff. She's just so fabulous. And if she wasn't there, it would take away so much from the whole clone dynamic. I think she is really, actually I think all of them are integral to what they're doing, but if she wasn't there, you wouldn't have that levity, that breath of fresh air, that unknown within the clones. I think with all the other clones, the unknown is outside of them. What other people are doing to them or situations the clones are getting into. With her, the unknown is so much just inside her own head.
Yeah, I love how neurotic she is. It's just...
It's beautiful.
There's nobody like her. And watching her is an experience I don't think I want to give up ever.
I really like her friendship with Felix and like how he's like the first person she calls and like they just become like best friends and it's really cute because That's all it is. It's that it's not like they're trying to force anything. It's just, look at these two buddies dealing with these crazy circumstances.
Which we needed with Felix, and I have a feeling we'll be talking about Felix here in depth in a moment. But when it started out with Felix and Allison, you had this potential problem in that, I mean, not Allison, Felix and Sarah, you had this potential problem in that Sarah as the main protagonist, and I do find it interesting that none of us mention Sarah as our favorite clone. And I don't think, I think she only like once or twice won our clone queen. That here's the main character of the story, our main anti-hero protagonist, and you know, she's just like, yeah, Sarah, whatever. Move the story along, let's get to the other clones. So when she's moving her story along, that could very easily have left Felix in the dust. But when he starts encountering Allison, and they have this funky, weird friendship, it's that they really care about each other, too. This is not, Felix is not somebody that Allison would have ever been friends with in her normal life that she would have thought of, you know? And the same, Allison is not... somebody that Felix would be friends with, but they have this bond that is so wonderful. I love it. It's
one of my favorite scenes in the past two episodes was when Allison was having a breakdown in the bathroom and all her soccer mom friends and some, you know, Ainsley and all the others were trying to get her to open the door, but she would only talk to Felix. And it was so telling of how their relationship would evolve and what it would become, where she really depended on Felix to be that support, even though he wasn't that close of a friend back then. And I loved that the writers didn't forget about it, and they kept throwing those scenes in and... Allison and Felix could
the
have
couple.
Their own show. It would probably be a sitcom, but it would be brilliant, and I would watch it. I mean, I would stream the hell out of it. I would probably not watch it as it aired, but streaming it from BBC America or Prime.
I think it would air right after the House Hunters with Ichabod Crane. Yeah, we are making our whole network here of really cool shows that need to happen.
Listen
to our Sleepy Hollow podcast because we got a couple of ideas in that one. Yeah, Allison makes me look at all of the soccer moms in my neighborhood a little differently.
A little more fear, a little more respect.
No. Oh, and when she got in that, when they tried to abduct her and she's just fighting, oh, her fighting back and with the whistle and everything, she just... What I love is we're in on the joke and she's not. Everybody else is in on the joke of Allison except for Allison. And that, I think, is just brilliant. Okay, so we've got our favorite clones. Not that we don't love all the other clones. Oh, you want one more? She has to jump in.
I have one more, I insist. Because we must talk about her because she is beautiful, and that's Cosima. Because... how can you just not... She's, like, super science-y, but then also she's sitting there and she's, like, smoking weed. And she's just, like, she's crazy and perfect and smart. And she stays calm under all the pressure that gets put on especially her, because she's the one that knows what's going on. And she's got all this pressure from all sides. She's got pressure from the clones, and when she's at Dyad, she's got pressure from the people above her, and pressure from Delphine, and all these things that are like, oh, and she's just like, I can deal with it. And then she's sick, and she's like, I can deal with it. She's just so brave, and she contributes so much. She does so much, and it's so wonderful, and she would also make a better biology teacher than anyone I've ever had.
I had a really cool science teacher that I could see her having been at least in the same friend circle as Cosima. A fun little note, which I'm sure you guys know, but hopefully everybody does know, is that her name, and she is based on a friend of Graham Mason, the creator of Orphan Black, whose name is Cosima. And she is the science tech advisor on the show to make sure that, and what I love is how they say this, that everything is plausible. Everything doesn't have to be 100% fact, but it has to be, like in Mythbusters terminology, at least plausible. This is, you know, nothing is busted. So I really appreciate the fact that the show is also trying to do the same good science that Cosima is. Yeah, she is... How you have such a great free spirit and the science and the sensuality and the science together. She really helps burst some of those molds that you have of what the science geeks are like or what the free spirit ones are like. It's like, you know, these aren't separate. It's like, I get offended a lot of times when people think that just because I'm a geek, I don't like sports or I don't like fashion or I don't like these other, you know, whatever else. It's like, don't pigeonhole me. I can be a geek and be many other things. And that's what I think Cosima also represents, is like, don't pigeonhole me. Just because I'm smart does not mean I'm not all these other things.
And she's really valuable too.
Yeah, even though Sarah in particular treats her like a science monkey.
Like, she's the one that got her and Kira out. She's the one who does She does so much for the Clone Club, and I don't think she gets nearly enough credit for it. She works hard, and they're all like, do-do-do-do-do, and then she's, like, trying to save all their lives.
Well, I think that comes from the fact that she's the one that's sitting behind the computer and figuring things out, whereas everybody else is running and punching and shooting and all this. So it's like, yeah, Cosima, you just sit there and do this. It's like, without her, you guys would really be up the creek.
Yeah, they wouldn't have anything to do without Cosima. Because Cosima is like, she's like the brain.
Well, she has a great heart, though, too. I love even that very beginning, Alex, you had alluded to that scene when Sarah is at Allison's, and we have Sarah, Allison, and Cosima meeting for the first time. And we're clones, you know, Allison's all like, we're clones. Can't you get it? They're all trying to kill us. And Cosima's like, yeah, I would have floated the clone thing a little bit softer. That she understands, she's much more aware of the surroundings and things and is really looking for those. I love the fact that Cosima got that Delphine was her monitor and is being aware of this, knows this, and is questioning that, but is also realizing that there's this attraction and maybe she's not being duplicitous, or at least not as duplicitous as, you know, people would think, that she's allowing herself to trust Delphine while still being careful about it. So she's trying to follow her head and her heart and realizes when those kind of are at odds and is trying to work through it. So she's not this flat character who's going from point A to point B to point C to point D. I appreciate that. And I have to admit, I love her with Kira.
Mm-hmm. That's what I was just thinking about. Like, yeah. The end scene of... Is that, like, at the very, very end of right season two? When she, like, wakes up? And, oh, man. I remember I was bawling my eyes out. I was like, no, Cosima, no! You can't die! You can't do this to me, baby! No! Cosima! And then she's just being woken up by Kira, and I'm like, I have to, like, pause the show and, like, go take a breather. Like, I'm gonna be okay.
It was a really sweet moment, because, yeah, it's like so many of the shows nowadays, and I think we need to do a Chicks podcast, a journal about this. So many shows rely on killing off a main character in order to advance a story, and there was worry that Cosima was going to falter. Now, I think the fact that she's named after and fashioned after a friend and tech advisor on the show kind of helps her out a little bit there, but that was kind of a worry right then. What's going to happen, and is she going to come back? To be woken by Kira, very sweet, because Kira does have the potential of being an annoying little kid, and so far I'm still in the monkey phase. She's a monkey. I'm okay with her, but her being waking Cosima up with that sweet little face thing, and then sharing the book, The Island of Dr. Moreau, so we know that Cosima is able to now advance even more. I mean, she's discovered that they're all patented. That was a great moment. Don't sign, and we're all patented and all that. Cosima keeps getting that storyline that helps advance us even further and not just make this a really basic story.
Yeah, everybody would be lost without her. So I can't even imagine if she dies, knock on wood, because we don't want that. I don't think they would be able to deal with it. For a while, especially in season one, I was kind of afraid that she would be this stock clone that they used every time they needed something sciencey explained, and she wouldn't get any kind of character development out of it. Thankfully, that didn't happen. So, but yeah, I was afraid that they would go there. And now I'm afraid that if they ever choose to kill her off, they would need to substitute somebody for her to explain things, to get those breakthroughs with science. It would probably fall to Delphine at one way or another. But I like the softness. Yeah. And
I like Cosima and Delphine. I didn't think I'd really like Delphine, but I do like the sweetness of their relationship. Although poor Delphine has now been shipped off to Germany, I think it is. And we have, what was it, Scott? Is it Scott that was their other science geek friend who had the crush on Cosima? That was really cute. She's, I think, going to rely on him a little bit more this season. Which is kind of cute because he's just a little puppy. He's a little puppy following Cosima. I like it.
All the characters, they're all my children.
He still needs puppies.
No way, I think that happened to
Which is kind of creepy considering how old you are. It's like,
I don't care.
Okay, well, we've done our clones, and we're running long here, but I definitely want to talk about our backups. Our favorite non-clone characters that we have out there. I have a feeling of at least one person that I know will be talked about in this. And I think if I don't let her have this one, Alex, things will just explode. I think Marie has somebody she wants to talk about as her favorite backup.
Yes.
Who could it be?
I don't know. I like Felix. I like Felix the best. Felix is...
No.
Felix is Felix, and he's the only thing... I would watch a show just about Felix. Like, you don't even need Allison, you don't even need any other clones. Just, like, Felix. It could be Felix just sitting in his house, just going about his day-to-day business. I'd be like, oh, yes! I'm so excited! Because he's so cute and funny, and... But he's also really nice and caring. Like, we were talking about... He's really good, and he's really... caring for Allison, and he was always willing to help Allison out, but he's also there for Sarah, and he's like, he helps Helena when she needs it. I mean, sure, he's being told to, but he helps Helena, and he's so nice with Kira, and... Felix.
Yeah, I don't care for him at all.
You want to fight? Let's go.
I love Z. He's honestly the other heart, I think, of this whole series. He really is, because he's the one that is kind of like the snap out of it, but he's also so in his own little world, in his assless chaps, or coming to the door in his cute little short robe, and doing all of his art, and...
Those chaps.
He's fabulous. There's no other way to put it. And I really love the bond that he and Sarah have, and the fact that the bond is growing with all of his other sestras out there, that he is cautious, but he's very accepting. He's kind of like how Cosima is with Delphine, knowing that she's her monitor as well. Fee is very aware that, you know, these other clones, these are still outsiders, and we have to be just aware, because you never know. Has somebody been turned, or something like Rachel? But he's very open to all of them. Until, of course, they hurt his family there, like Rachel.
And he didn't have to be there for Sarah. Like, the second she showed up, even before she told him anything about that, she could have just been like, no, because she came, didn't she come to Fee after she had, like, broken up with Vic because she was in trouble and all that stuff? Fee could have just been like, no, I'm done with you. I don't want to put up with you anymore. But he didn't, and he's always there, no matter what they need, and it's just so sweet. Like, he doesn't have to cope with this. He could have just been like, nope, I'm out, I'm done, I'm not, mm-mm-mm. But no, he was like, I'll help you. I'm feeling.
I think that adds a lot to the dynamic itself of the Clone Club, because he doesn't have to be there. So the way he looks at it, and he's not involved in a way that he's not a clone. So he brings this new perspective. And I know, I remember when they decided to pair him up with Art. That was brilliant. Because that was something new and interesting. And every time we get a new point of view, it's usually Felix who brings it in. Because he's the one to point out how, let's do it differently. Or, here, have your Clone Club phone.
Very practical. Yes, it's green. Yeah, don't use the pink ones anymore. Those have been hacked. We're now on green. Yeah, he's great. You mentioned him with Art. And I think he was the way that brought Art back in to make Art relevant to the story. Because Art really could have easily just been, you're not worth it anymore. Your storyline's kind of played out, the whole Beth Childs and Sarah and blah, blah, blah. Bringing him back in and letting him in on everything with all the Helena and everything that's going on makes Art relevant to the story again. And that's because of Felix. Felix really is that touchstone that's connecting all these other characters. I mean, he's even the one that I think really holds the Clone Club together overall. If it wasn't for him, the clones would just kind of scatter and not really have this. He's the, come on, everybody, I've got things to do. I've got boys to go meet and Art to make. Can we just get it together? Jordan does a fabulous job too, because if you've ever heard Jordan Guevara's talk, he doesn't have that accent. I totally believe him, just like with Tatiana. There, you know, every interview I see with him, he just seems so very different from Fee.
Think he's an actor or something?
It's just amazing because he's so natural with how he does Fee. You kind of, you know, you have those actors that when they inhabit a part like that, and then you see him on the side, they're very similar. Their mannerisms are similar, or they bring a whole part of it. Like, I love Matthew Perry, but if you see Matthew Perry talk in real life and then you watch Chandler, very similar. His characters are very similar to him.
Yeah.
Jordan is not like Fee at all. And yet I believe him 100% that Fee is a real person, not a character.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, I'm going to jump in here and say my favorite backup, who surprised me, and Alex is going, oh, she'll probably pick Cal because he's hot, and Cal is hot. But I'm actually...
Cal is hot.
He is hot on Game of Thrones. He is hot on his... I think it's a Chanel commercial. He is hot on the show.
Is he on Game of Thrones?
I appreciate his acting skills.
That's what I'm going to go with.
He looks like a lumberjack. If you're a lumberjack, you don't need acting skills. You just need to have the right camera angle.
Alex, what's the part that he took over in Game of Thrones? Because in season...
Dario Naharis.
Yeah, so it's him and Dany. Him and Daenerys. Ooh. And when I saw him, I went, no offense to the other actor, but oh, hello, nurse.
Yeah, we appreciate your acting skills.
I appreciate your acting skills very much. And I feel so bad now going from talking about Cal that way and going into who I am going to actually say, because I do love Fee. You've already taken Fee, and we need to highlight somebody besides Fee. Is an actor who I really thought was a total throwaway in this series. He's not a big deal. We don't care. He's not going to be anything. He is what, in our Gotham podcast, Alex and I call our Butch, and don't hurt our Butch. And that is Donnie. Totally surprised me. How much love Donnie, considering how nothing he was when he started. It was this really great buildup of he's just the annoying husband, or now he's a monitor. He doesn't care. I love this turnip head. He is just... such a great counterpoint to Allison. I think he's going to be a great addition to the Clone Club. And I have to admit also that Christian Brune at The Brune is really good on Twitter too. We've had a few Twitter conversations back and forth. So that endears me even more, just like Drew Powell at The Drew Powell on Gotham.
I don't not like him, but it's just like any time he's on screen, you just want to like facepalm. It's like,
but that's the beauty of Donnie.
Donnie, no. Like, you need like a spray bottle. It's like, Donnie, no. Bad Donnie.
I'm sorry. But that's the visual that will never go away.
Little rolled paper on the tapping on the nose. No, bad Donnie. Yeah. But that's exactly why, because I now care about him. We had this thing when we were recording the podcast. We couldn't remember who was the actor that was playing Paul. And we felt so bad about not knowing his name that now that's our code word, you know, Dylan Bruce, Dylan Bruce, Dylan Bruce, that we like you. You've changed our opinion of you.
You deserve our attention. So now we know your real name.
You deserve our attention. And Christian Brune did that with me. Is I couldn't have cared less about Donnie in season 1, and over season 2, I'm just like, you're important to this story. So I think it's because of that total 180 going from I don't care about Donnie at all to don't hurt Donnie. Don't hurt Donnie.
Donnie can stay. Donnie has to stay.
Donnie has to stay because Allison needs Donnie.
Yeah. No, Donnie and Christian, they're just brilliant. I don't know how I watched season 1 and not love Donnie. It just, season 1 is like, yeah, so that happened, but oh my god, did Donnie come to the series in season 2? Because I could barely remember Donnie from season 1. Yeah. It wasn't that I wasn't paying attention. Just my brain kind of, you know, glossed over Donnie. Allison, I could recall, I could quote some of her lines, but Donnie, and in season 2, it's like, it was a brand new character, because he was amazing.
When he picked up Leaky on the street and got him in, you know, was in the car with Leaky, and Leaky is calling him, you know, a turnip and all this, and Donnie is getting all upset, and he's shaking his hands, and then accidentally shoots Leaky in the head. I'm just like, oh, Donnie, Donnie. I love
just
you.
Like
he's a breath. It's like Allison. He's that breath of fresh air that I think the clones need. And who else is going to stick with Allison but Donnie?
I think the only reason they had Donnie kill Leaky, though, was so he could get more involved. Like, they didn't need to kill Leaky. Leaky was done. But they needed to make sure Donnie was in on it. And so they had Donnie kill Leaky.
That's probably true, but I still enjoyed it.
I did too. Well, especially since it's like that kind of cuts out a tie that they had. I think even though Leaky was kind of nefarious in his whole Evo Devo thing there, I think Leaky was still there for the science, whereas Rachel isn't. And I think they did need to kill Leaky completely, because they need to really make it where you don't have that just the science thing in the big baddies. I think Leaky did need to go.
Well, but he was already gone. They were like, even if he takes the wrong street corner, they were like, we have a guy waiting to kill you. Don't take the wrong street corner.
Yeah, but I think that's what's kind of funny, is that he didn't die because of that. He died because of this mishap with Donnie. I think it's actually kind of funny. But if he's still out there, there would still be a chance for the Clone Club to somehow connect with him and maybe get some information. Nope. That's all gone now. And it's because of Donnie. The answers are buried in the garage underneath a slab.
No, bad Donnie.
So, Alex, you?
Like, you have to ask. And I know intellectually that I should probably pick Paul because he had an amazing development over the seasons.
Dylan Bruce, yeah.
Yes, but I wouldn't be me if I went with the reasonable thing. So instead I'm going to go with Jesse. Yes, a one episode wonder. Surprise. Played by wonderful Patrick J. Adams, whom I adore and love, and the character itself was so out of it, so not disconnected from everything we've come to know about the show. We often call Donnie and Allison and everybody else a breath of fresh air, but he was an actual breath of fresh air because he knew nothing. He didn't turn up to be connected to anything, even though for a while there,
that we know of,
though, oh shut up. For a while there, we worried that he would. And I'm really, really hoping that they will bring him back for season 3. Out of everybody that we've seen in the past, Jesse is the one that I want to see the most. And I know it's difficult with scheduling, because Patrick J. Adams has a show that he's a lead on.
He does? And, really?
Yes, there's this tiny little show on USA called Suits. And yes, that he is on. But I really want him to be back and possibly, you know, take Sarah and Allison and drive to rescue Helena. Just for the kicks. If he doesn't, then I will read fanfics where he does, so I'll be good either way.
Or write them. You might write them too.
No, I'm too busy editing my stuff, but I will want to write them.
A new section of read them. sci-fi literature.
The thing I loved about Jesse was, like you said, he's just this brief character that we meet, but he has such a profound impact on Helena. And I think it's interesting that all of us picked somebody who was a counterpart to our favorite clone, somebody who was really an integral part of that clone. So that, you know, that kind of shows where we're at there with that. He really brought about this whole other side. And this is her boyfriend. He doesn't care what she looks like. He doesn't care how much she eats or how much she drinks or any. There's
that
this
was,
connection.
Yeah, that was my favorite thing about Jesse, was just how he just liked her. Helena didn't pretend. She didn't have to do anything different. It was just Helena. She had snuck off. She went to the bar. And she met this guy. And he just liked her. He liked her for everything she was. And that was just the most adorable thing.
And she's got his hat. I like how she's got the hat. Yeah. And it's her boyfriend. And they're going to see each other again. I have a feeling we will see him again. I just don't, like you said, I don't know how. Because it's got to work out scheduling-wise. But I think he really is important to Helena's story, and at some point I think he has to come back, even if it is another one episode wonder kind of thing. I think he has to be there. Yeah, it was such a sweet scene. And I think it's something that is motivating Helena in what she's going to do next as she's seeing this different side. And I'm really looking forward to that.
The one thing I'm afraid of with Jesse being motivation for Helena is that she will or she could start to idealize him a little too much.
I think she already has.
Yeah, but she's the one who's not entirely stable. Well, I know that we talk about a lot on Sleepy Hollow how Ichabod had this idealized version of his wife in his mind, and once the reality set in, things didn't go so well. And I'm afraid that if Helena is faced with this man who no longer meets the idealized version that she worked up in her mind, that might not end well, because when you're unstable, you need, you know, you don't deal with disappointments all that well. But that's a side note, you know. It's probably never going to happen because it's going to be a happy ending, and if not, I will have words with certain people on the production team. But other than that, you know, it's something that I thought about in the past.
We can take a trip together if they don't bring Tony back, you and I.
Oh, definitely.
They'll do it's that, and then we'll bring Tony back, and we'll go.
We'll have words.
Take him down. We'll bring our hot glue guns and just be like, you know what you have to do.
Hot glue gun would be easier to bring along than a garbage disposal.
We can arrange. We can have it all arranged.
Well, I think a great thing with Jesse is he helped Helena see a different side of herself that the sisters had already started opening up. That a different kind of humanity and a different kind of softness. I don't think that makes her, though, soft at all. We still have Psycho Helena that went and burned the barn and is off to find her babies. My babies, you took my babies. But I think it helps her kind of have that touch that there's something more than Tomas's Prolethean view, and she's expanded out of there. And maybe she's going to come to Jesse's rescue. Because I think Jesse, I kind of got the hint that Jesse, something did not befall Jesse that was too honky-dory on his merry way. Not pain, but that he is not out of the picture. Just my thoughts.
Yeah.
And I'm only saying that because there's 7 time zones between me and Alex, so.
And you feel safe.
The hurt is emotional, not physical. So at least I'm a little bit better there. So what are you guys looking forward to in season 3? What's a storyline that you really liked in the past that you want to see going forward into season 3? Or even just, you know, favorite storyline? Besides specifically relating to the
character. All I want, all I've been able to think about is Eyepatch Rachel. I want, like, Pirate Rachel. That's all I want. I just, an eyepatch and just, like... Like, her, like, having to, like, turn her head to, like, look at things, like Nick Fury, just, like, like, oh my goodness, all I want is Rachel with an eye patch. Like, my dad has said, oh, they're probably just gonna give her, like, a fancy bionic eye, because they have all the science, but no, eye patch. That's all I need.
Can I tell you, I was trying to refresh my memory about Orphan Black last night to talk about this, and I watched, they have a clip. Orphan Black in 4 minutes, and it is actually really good. It really is pretty much the entire series so far in 4 minutes, and I totally forgot about the pencil in the eye, and I'm like, how did I forget about that? Because that was creepy awesomeness that Rachel is
that
just
was
gonna, it's,
so
it's gonna elevate
gross.
Rachel even more into utter psychosis.
She's gonna become like a crazy evil pirate lady. With an eye patch, and it's going to be amazing.
Yeah.
I'm so excited.
Me, I'm looking forward to more Jesse. Michelle Forbes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because Jesse is a given. I mean, it's something that I believe it's going to happen, and it's going to happen, so I don't have to look forward to it, because I'm going to get it. But what I want more of, and what I want them to explore more is Michelle Forbes and
her storyline with the little clone that's not exactly...
Charlotte.
Yeah, that's not exactly a clone, but technically still a clone. So I want to see more of that, and I want to see where their storyline will go, because technically they have a Custer clone locked there. And
Scarface,
you know,
yes.
It's not going to end well. And he's going to escape at some point. Because, duh. So I want to see how they deal with that and what's going to happen to them. I want more of those two. Because, well, Michelle Forbes, duh. Every time I can get her on my screen is a good day.
When we first saw Michelle Forbes, I was actually really worried that she was just going to be a new, bigger, badder baddie. That she was going to be basically Rachel and Leaky combined, but higher up on the food chain. And I was really worried about that. So I liked seeing that there's something different, that, you know, we had the science, the Lita female clones were more the science clones, and the Castor clones we now find out were given to the military. And she's in between there and playing both sides. So I'm glad she's not just a straight up and up baddie, that there's something more to her.
Yeah.
And I think that's going to be intriguing, especially since she does have this connection, a very real emotional connection to the clones with Charlotte, who is, I can see that girl growing up into Tatiana Maslany. You know, I can see that they got a little girl that I could believe would grow up into these other clones. And I think that's an interesting way to introduce a new clone that, like you said, isn't a new clone. Tatiana was probably like, oh, finally, I get a break. I don't have to come up with a whole new persona. Somebody else, another actor's responsibility now.
Yeah. You worry about it.
I think it's going to be a really good storyline, is the melding of these two and Michelle kind of leading the way. And I'm not saying she's a good guy, because I think there's still some alternative motives there. But I have a feeling she's going to be the enemy of my enemy as my friend kind of thing for a while.
Probably. And that's what's interesting about her, at least to me. So... More of her.
I really want to see more of Mrs. S and find out exactly what the heck is going on with her.
I was just thinking, if none of you guys brought it up, we're going to have to talk about Shabbat, because what?
She knows. I mean, she started out seeming so nice and normal. I'm just taking care of Kira because you're an irresponsible parent and blah, 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 blah. And then you just see these layers being pulled back on her and all these different, what did you know? How did you know? What is your connection? You've kept, what was it, Ethan, Rachel's dad, you know, you kept him in hiding for all this time. You have these connections here and there. Took them to the safe house that really ended up not being safe and you know, blew them, your safe house people, away when you found out that they had turned on you. And you really do seem to be there for Sarah and Kira and Fee, but you have your own agenda. And Maria Doyle Kennedy is just fabulous in this part. I love her. She is so not one-dimensional or two-dimensional. She's four-dimensional. She's not even three-dimensional. She's four-dimensional. So I really want to see more of that and what those connections are. Because we still have this connection into the original police story that was way back at the beginning with Art and Beth and the woman that Beth accidentally, in quotes, shot. And I have a feeling that Angie Chen, I think was her name.
Mm-hmm.
I have a feeling that's going to come back up, and I have a feeling that that's something that Mrs. S is going to be involved in or knows about or somehow connects. So, more Mrs. S.
It's all very nerve-wracking, because I cannot figure her out. I don't think anyone really can. Like, whose side is she on? What is she trying to do? I mean, yeah, it's pretty clear now that she's at least doing her best for Kira, but... there's just this whole other side to her, and you just can't figure her out. She's so elusive, and it's just like, what does she want? I don't understand.
Well, and especially those final scenes that we see her with Paul and the military.
Yeah. I was just like, where did this come from? What are you doing?
And
what?
And I do believe that her focus, her motivation are to help Sarah and Kira. Totally 100% believe that. But she is keeping so much hidden and so much from them. And yeah, I'm like, what is she doing with Paul? What is she doing with the military? What is going on?
I feel like it's like you see like taco dip and you go and you put your chip in and you're like, oh, look at this little taco dip, and you bite into it and it's like 17 layer taco dip and you're like, what just happened to me?
Maria Doyle Kennedy just got compared to 7-layer taco dip. That's a new one. I did not expect that. Way to go, Marie.
It's still okay. I just barely woke up. It's not my fault.
Okay, so what other storylines did we really love or are we looking forward to?
More Tony.
That's definite.
More Tony.
Yeah, but we've talked about that. I want to see art as well.
Yeah.
I want to see more art. And I want to see
Paul. Yeah, more art.
All the guys who shined in season 2, they deserve... I'm afraid that they won't get as much screen time now that we have male clones, and that's the one storyline they will for sure explore and want to, you know, look into. And so I'm afraid that because of the male clones in Castor Project, we're going to lose some of the guys we've had so far. I'm afraid that Art is first in the chopping block. I'm afraid that Paul might not get as much to do unless he's connected far more closely with the Castor Project.
Well, it was revealed that he is a double agent from Project Castor that was spying on Dyad and Leeta. So I think Paul is going to become a big storyline in this season. Maybe not initially, but I think in the season, definitely. And to me, Art's one of those that keeps it grounded in reality, because, I mean, this is a sci-fi show, but we still have to keep it grounded in some semblance of reality for us to keep buying it and wanting to,
I feel like,
to, you know, to actually spend this time, that it's not just all this weird, funky fantasy thing. You know, he's the cop he's going to uncover what that whole thing was with Angie Chen and the Prolethians. I think he's that connection there.
I think that Art and Vic are going to, is Vic still even a guy? I don't even know. I don't remember.
He's but still there.
Vic has a day job now,
too. Like, is he still alive? I can't remember if they killed him.
No, he's still alive, but Michael Mando does have a show of his own, so I have a feeling he won't be in it.
He does, and it's really weird. He's in Better Call Saul, and he's like, he's a gangster, but he's tough. And so it's like, that's Vic. He's not cool. Why is he cool in this show? He's not cool. That's just Vic. And when my dad and I watch Better Call Saul, so we're watching it, I go, hey, look, it's Vic. And his name is like Nacho in the show or something, but I don't call him Nacho. He's Vic. He's Vic.
Well, it's like the governor. I'm like, oh, it's Jackson Lake. Oh, he's nice. I like him. All my Walking Dead friends are like, are you crazy? The governor's evil. I'm like, I like him. He's nice. He was the next doctor. So I totally understand that. I can't help when I see those commercials for Better Call Saul. I can't help but think of Vic covered in glitter.
Like, I keep expecting him to, like, raise his hand and be missing a finger, but he isn't. And I'm like, oh, this is weird. What am I watching?
I think it's going to be an interesting season, and Orphan Black never really has disappointed me. I mean, there might be small moments, but the episodes as a whole, Alex, I remember us podcasting, I don't think we ever had a Gotham moment. Sorry, Gotham. Where we're just like, yeah, we don't trust the writers anymore. I trust the writers, because they're just being fat.
They know what they're doing, that's for sure.
Definitely. So I'm looking forward to this in season 3, which does start April 18th. 19th was last year, April 18th on BBC America or any of those other AMC affiliates that you saw, Sundance, IFC. So everybody can see this. Nobody has an excuse. If you don't get BBC America, you do not have an excuse to miss this show. You can go stream it and binge watch on Amazon Prime or go find a friend that has it. Marie, I'm sure, would welcome you into her home.
Watch it with we'll have Orphan Black parties. Woo-hoo! But you'll have to listen to me cry over Felix, so
she'll be laughing and crying.
You win some, you lose some.
Necessary evil,
We'll be starting our regular episode podcasts right after that starts. So do make sure to subscribe to Sci-Fi for Chicks on iTunes or the podcast platform of your choice. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at Sci-Fi for Chicks. Kristen Brune, at the Brune. He tweets with us quite a lot, and hopefully we can get more of the cast to do so as well. One of the first actual people, Alex, when I started the Twitter feed for Chicks that I followed was Patrick J. Adams, because I'm still trying to get him to follow us so he can find out about the shiny happy place. Yeah. And I can embarrass the crap out of you.
Because you're mean and evil.
I am. I am so evil. So anybody that wants to help me embarrass Alex, let's start by getting at Half Adams to find out about the shiny happy place. Don't forget to go over to scififorme.com and like them on the social media of your choice. You can email chicks, scififorchicks@scififorme.com, or call us on the hotline, 573-427-2434. That's 573-42-SCI-FI. Ladies, thank you for this look back at Orphan Black. Now that we don't have Sleepy Hollow anymore, I have something to look forward to.
Yeah.
Wait, Gotham still has to end. I still have a few more episodes of Gotham to go. No, we actually like Gotham right now. If you watch Gotham, go over and check out our podcast as well on Sci-Fi for Chicks. We might be doing iZombie. We're still thinking about that one. And, you know, a pipe dream, I think, is Outlander.
It'll never be as good as In the Flesh.
I have a feeling those are pipe dreams, but, you know, a girl's got a dream, right?
Yeah.
More Michael Hussman is always a good thing. Oh, I'm going to have two series that are going to have him on. I'm so happy. I know I didn't pick him, but he's kind of like Sarah. You know, it's like, you know, he's in the main storyline that has to go through. And I'm like, I'm sorry, I really like these other ones. You can take your shirt off now and you can do all sorts of manly things. And I'll just
we'll be good. Happy. We're good.
We're good. Thank you, ladies, for joining me today.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
We will be talking more Orphan Black soon. So... I don't know how I would.
Get ready for iPad Rachel.
Arg. Arg. We will see you soon. Bye bye.
This is a fight for knowledge. This is war.
Adiós, Tenajbi.
Those with power do not give it up easily.
They never have.
And they never will.
I am not your weapon.
I am not your toy. I am not your experiment.
I'm not your property.
This has been a presentation of SciFiForMe.com. Copyright 2015 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media. This is Sci-Fi For Me Radio.